Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Kind of sick, but feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, what's up, man? Trying to clear out things, man.
I see.
Are you more excited for the Eagles to fly or heading back out to Vegas?
I feel like it's going to be Vegas by default. As we are recording on a Sunday night, Jalen Hurts just ran on a third and goal, did not get it. Eagles up 3-0 right now, so we will see how that goes. This is either going to be very prescient or it's going to be very funny to listen to when you hear this, if the Dolphins do the thing. But feeling good, excited to head out to Vegas for a singular day. I was going to be heading to the parade and then coming back on Tuesday. So I'm going to have some fun, ready to capture the vibes. So should be a good time.
Are you actually ready to capture the vibes?
Probably not the way that they would. Ace just said post-game after game four that the people have to be 8 shots in. That will not be me. So within that context, the answer is a resounding no. But I will be there to capture the happiness of said vibe. So we will do that. Also, before we get started, hope you feel better, friend. Never fun to not feel well. So glad you are thugging this out for us. Let's get into some news items. On the W side, the Phoenix Mercury hiring Nate Tibbetts as their new head coach. What has been a longtime NBA assistant, now taking the leap into the W sphere without prior women's college basketball experience, which has rightfully rubbed some folks the wrong way. And I do think at a very basic level, the optics aren't great, which says nothing about his coaching acumen or how he may actually do. As we talked about the Mercury throughout the W season, there just needs to be a lot done with the roster in general. And so, like, I think that is going to determine a lot of the success anyway. But, like, the optics aren't great there. It's not only not having the experience on the women's side personally, his dad was a women's coach, but not having the experience personally, but also getting the highest paid coach in the W tag off rip, which, again, that's an optics deal. So, like, it's weird, but, like, I am curious to see what he does as a coach and what he tries to implement. And, again, a lot of that's just going to be dictated by what the roster ends up being. But I do want to see that part. But that's kind of, those were my opening thoughts when I saw the news come through. How did you feel when he was announced as head coach?
Did not see it coming at all. That was number one. I sat and looked at a lot of the conversations that it sparked. And I think those are a lot of things that have been simmering. And I understand the backlash. I totally get it. I have nothing to directly counter it. But it did send me down like a perspective, thought, thinking rabbit hole. So take all of this for what you will. So there's two things we know about Matt Ishbia, right? He wants to win. He's willing to spend to win. And he's going to be involved. That's fair, right?
Yeah.
Generally in sports, when that happens, ownership or management, they're going to look for their people. Right or wrong, they're going to find the people they believe in to execute their vision. Now, I point to the general manager hire, Nick Uren. And this is not a shot at all because he has put the work in different levels. He's in the video room. When I was in the video room in the league, I think he was the head video coordinator for the Mercury at some point. He's from Phoenix, on staff, transferred to front office. I totally understand it. But when he got hired, I looked back. There were two things he said that stood out to me. One, there's a clear willingness to invest the necessary resources to build a winning team and culture in Phoenix. Secondly, when I thought about taking this job, it checks so many boxes from a personal and professional standpoint. And that made me think, is this part of like the unspoken thing with the W's growth that maybe we haven't considered? Especially as more money comes in via TV, sponsors, new ownership, as the league continues to grow, especially with what it values and represents, is that going to draw more eyes and more interest and more people who may see that growth and want a piece of it? Do with that what you will. Again, just a thought that popped in my head. We've seen people jump from the league to the W, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can just point at the Aces if you want to.
Right.
Here's the hidden part that also got me thinking. Nate was on staff with the Magic. And I want to say, was he not the top assistant or close to it?
He was up there.
Earlier today, I went to the Magic website. He's still listed as an active assistant coach. And I'm trying to find the right words to express it, but a current NBA assistant on staff jumping to the W does say something about where the W is going, no?
Yeah, I think that's fair. So, and to quickly bounce off of that before you keep going, like, the timing of it is also what kind of threw me off of, more so than, like, we don't know who, like, the coaching candidates were, et cetera. And so the timing of him taking the job while the Magic are in preseason is also interesting to me. But continue.
Now, there was going to be a backlash there no matter what. There always is when it comes to jumping between levels, experience, question marks, especially with the W. I understand every question that has been asked. I feel like the sentence of he's the highest paid coach in W history really magnified everything and changed the conversation from what would have been probably here to all the way up here. And I've asked you this question, I'll even ask on the pod. Is that because they think he's the best coach ever, or could it be because of the person in charge?
I think it's absolutely more of the latter, which I don't think that's inherently bad unless he ends up not doing a good job. But I do think it's more of that, more than we think he's a better coach than Becky Hammett or something like that. And what got me thinking on that, which, again, not a great optics deal, but as the league grows, this was also just going to be like the hidden benefit isn't the right word, but this is also the hidden thing of Becky getting the contract that she got. It was well-deserved, and honestly, she deserves more, especially after back-to-back titles, but that was also going to set the bar at a certain point. And I think zooming out, that's what you want, but that also comes with, for lack of a better way to phrase it right now, hirings like these, where it's not coming from the coaching pool that you expect. And because the bar is here and they take this job, it's okay, they are beneficiaries of this bar. And for like the 18th time I've said on this pod, the optics aren't great on that. We would still just have to see how he does, but that comes with it. And then you made the point about, you know, people jumping from the league to the W. I also go back to James Wade jumping from the W back to the league. And I just wonder, you know, bouncing off your early points about, you know, people seeing the growth and wanting to get a piece of that, how does that start to factor in if we get more NBA people, or even if it is NBA people, just more coaches without the prior W background or women's basketball background, period? If they start hopping in and then jumping to the NBA or wherever they feel is end goal for them versus the W being a standalone great league, what does that mean? How does that factor in? I don't have the answer to that, but I do wonder, like, where is that going to go? And how are we going to handle that?
No, me too. And optics are the optics. I do hope that this is... I do hope the opportunities still remain, and that's a fight that's not going to go away anytime soon. And so I fully understand that part of it. And I'll tell you one thing. You have a bullseye for some of these coaches, the chip on their shoulder.
Yeah. Like, I was making the joke the other day, like, Becky's got to go into Mark Davis' office, like, yeah, that, $1 more. I need, give me that plus $1 or plus 50 cents.
Actually, no. Can I make another joke?
Go ahead.
No, you go in, you put the two rings down. You say, nah, $2 more, but.
And I just wonder, like, this is, I guess, more of the respectfully messy portion. We can move from here. But, like, less so than, like, Becky, who, again, is established. She deserves more, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I do wonder, like, I compare to Nate Tibbetts' path, which, again, it hasn't officially started yet, to, like, Kurt Miller, who spent so much time just coaching women's basketball on the college side and everything else, then makes the leap to the W as an assistant head coach. He's had a tremendous tenure overall. I wonder how he has to feel to see Nate come in. It's like, wait a minute. Huh? So I don't know. But we will see. I'm fascinated, again, by Phoenix's offseason. Diana Taurasi's already said she's going to be back. Brittany Griner hasn't officially signed back yet, but I would imagine she's going to be back. Skylar Diggins-Smith, safe to say she will not be back. So Phoenix will have some cap room, have some picks to play with. We will see what their offseason is going to be like. Go ahead.
Real quick, before you keep us moving, a quick free throw adjacent question. Are you ready for defensive Taurasi?
Counter question. Is she ready for defensive Taurasi?
Moving right along.
How much zone are they going to play? Okay. on the NBA side, we'll go to some somber news first. Grizzly center Steven Adams is going to be out for the season as he has surgery to repair a torn PCL for him. He's been out for a while, dating back to last season, and recovery has not gone as planned. So now we're getting surgery, and it is of the season-ending variety. It's fair to say that that's going to be a blow for the Memphis Grizzlies, who are already going to be without Ja Morant for the first 25 games of the season. We have no timetable yet on Brandon Clark, who's expected to return after suffering an Achilles injuries last season, but we don't have the official timeline on that yet. How much of a blow, and how do you see this being a blow for this Memphis team?
Well, first off, it's tough. It's tough for Steven Adams to have to deal with this setback. He's been fun in Memphis. It's been fun to watch him bounce back in Memphis. I know it has to be tough to prepare to come back, and now you got to sit right back out for a whole year. I was really excited to see him and Marcus Smart and Jaren Jackson Jr. play defense at the same time. They're going to miss him. His screening was key for them. His rebounding was key for them. And especially as Memphis has worked to get more movement in their half-court offense, he was growing as a hub that they could use for dribble handoffs and keep the flow going. They can make things work with Tillman. We've seen that before, and he's shown up almost every single time they ask him. But they're definitely going to miss Steven Adams. I think the toughest part is less how much does this hurt Memphis? How much does it hurt their start? But the toughest part is the West got better. And you have no Ja Morant start season. And this is the year where a rough start could really put you behind the eight ball. And even if you fight back, now you're maybe a 6 or 7 seed looking up and trying to have to navigate a tougher path. So how much does it hurt them there as much as on court?
I got you. I think, one, I just hope the recovery goes well for Steven Adams, who one of the better centers in the NBA, also seems to just be a really awesome dude. And so I hope he is able to recover fully. I've been kind of going back and forth between, like, where the hits are going to come with Steven Adams not being there. And, like, I 100% agree with you. Like, this makes the start for them more difficult to navigate without Ja, without Brandon Clark, now without Steven Adams. It's going to be a lot of pressure on Desmond Bane. It's going to be a lot more pressure on Jaren Jackson Jr. We got to see how real that creation growth that he showcased, dating back to the second half of last year, but over the summer as well. How much of that is real? How much of that can he carry over into the start? Offensively, they're going to miss him quite a bit. Like, you're not just losing your best screener. You are losing the best screener in basketball, period. And because I'm me, I'm like, let me look up some screening stats for Steven Adams. Let me just see what this looks like. one of three players per second spectrum to set at least 1,000 on-ball picks last year and connect on at least 70% of those. Led the NBA in screen contact percentage in terms of die-on percentage, which means he sets a screen, someone just gets slapped into the screen, they can't recover. Over 6.5% on those, led the league. Him and Draymond Green were the only two high-volume screeners above 6%. Third place is at 4%. It's just a gap. And so I think about how important the pick and roll would probably be for Memphis, at least at the start. You know what Marcus Smart can do. He can make reads, et cetera. He's going to take on more on-ball responsibility to Ja. If you remove him, what does their pick and roll attack look like? What do the Desmond Bane pick and rolls look like? And then you think about the way Steven Adams is used as a hub, obviously a good passer, but because he's so large and has this great understanding of angles, his handoffs basically act like pick and rolls with the way he's able to get that exchange off and create separation for his guards. What does that look like when it's Jaren, who isn't that big and also just doesn't have that kind of feel for screening? Xavier Tillman would be the closest thing to it, but, like, he's not the passer that Steven Adams is. He's also not the role threat that Steven Adams is off of those handoffs or those pick and rolls. And so for a Memphis group that quietly improved as a half-court offense but still wasn't a great half-court offense, losing Steven Adams hurts quite a bit. Defensively, I imagine they switch more very quietly in terms of, like, points per possession allowed. They were, like, a top 10 team when they did switch. They just didn't do it often. They were like 23rd in switch rate, if I remember correctly. So I do think you can still, you know, provided Xavier Tillman stays healthy or Santi Aldama, whatever, you can still do the, hey, you guard big person while Jaren roams thing. And I do think if they lean more into switching and you're adding Marcus Smart to this group, I do think this could still be a very successful switch group and thus still be a really good defense. The Jaren foul trouble thing is really going to loom large now, though. But I think the defense is still going to be good. Offense, I have some pretty big questions now.
Well, you know, I always try and find a hidden benefit when these things happen. And one thing for Memphis that I definitely have talked about in the preseason, they are going to have to find it. With no Jaw, you're going to need more movement in the half court. Your defense is going to have to be at a higher level to start. If Steven Adams is out, you may have to play smaller than you had anticipated earlier. That may be something you have to lean on or figure out before the playoffs, which could be a hidden bonus. You may have more of a runway for Santi Aldama and or David Roddy or even Kenneth Lofton Jr. to potentially contribute in that way. Also, Marcus Smart technically could play some four to a degree. If you needed to, he can bang with some of those people. He's very switchable. He can be used as a screener. So there's maybe it just adds to the, hey, we have to figure this out. But if we do, we're taking off. Mm-hmm.
And just quickly, because I was able to catch like at least one of your threads, but just in general, like how have you felt about Memphis's offense in the preseason?
I liked the fact that they were really trying to get some more movement going. Some of the spacing elements where, hey, we have Desmond Bane and Luke Kennard over here getting downhill. If there's nothing there, let's flow right into an elbow flash, handoff. Desmond Bane making quick decisions. I like the direction they were going in because that's how they're going to have to play because they don't necessarily have the guy to rely on to that same degree.
All right. If we don't have any closing Grizzlies thoughts, we can go to, I guess, technically a former Grizzly in Andre Iguodala, who announced his retirement. Yeah, I had that sprinkled that one in there. But the resume very quickly, a four-time champion with Golden State, one finals MVP in 2015, one-time All-Star, two-time All-Defensive Team member, which that's just too low. That is too low. We'll save that rant for another day. Any Andre Iguodala moments come to mind for you immediately? Any career thoughts for him?
No, salute to Iggy. Tremendous career. A lot of potential. He lasted a very long time. Impacted winning in ways that I don't know if people understood or saw coming.
You can say that again.
But no, you appreciate the career and the work that he did and the foundation he laid as far as being able to defend, being able to play make, kind of reinventing yourself to a degree to where, hey, I don't have to be this to contribute. I can buy in and do this and be elite and we can win. And that can be great. Lineup versatility that he provided. I think he provided more of a blueprint than people imagine. This is a safe space.
Yeah.
Probably all the film I had to break down of Andre Iguodala when Memphis thought they was going to trade Rudy Gay for him.
Oh, that would have been a fun one. Sorry, man.
It's okay. statute of limitations. I'm good, so no worries. But yeah, okay. Salute to Iggy.
Salute to that man, indeed. One of the smartest basketball players to come through the league. One of the most dynamic perimeter defenders that we've had in this generation, honestly. And again, two all-defensive teams drastically undersells how good of a perimeter defender he was. Just a really fun player archetype. As someone who gravitates towards wings that can do a whole bunch of things, that can play, make, and create for others, can get downhill, can defend, he just fits that mold for me, so I'm automatically drawn to him as he's dripped more into like the podcast space, even before the retirement. Like getting to hear him talk about basketball further reaffirms just how smart that dude is, period, but just how smart he is about basketball specifically. And to the point about him doing the little things that may not pop for you on the box score. The fact that he is ending his career with no Sixth Man of the Year awards is a travesty. As much as a travesty can be had in like basketball, because it's basketball at the end of the day, there's no reason he should have ended his career without winning at least one. Like, he was just the best bench player in the league for multiple years. And because too many voters just, okay, let's sort for bench players. Let's sort by points per game. He's on a team that won. He's your Sixth Man of the Year. And it just ignored all the things that Andre Iguodala was doing for a winner. Quick rant. We're done. But salute to Andre Iguodala. Quick question for you.
Yeah.
Is he a Hall of Famer for you?
legendary career.
Ah, so no. Okay. I knew where that was going. I just wanted to get your thoughts. You continue if you want. I didn't know.
I'm good.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, shout out to Andre Iguodala. Terry Stotts was the associate head coach for the Milwaukee Bucks, joining Adrian Griffin's staff. That is no longer the case as of a couple of days ago. The Athletic, Eric Name, Shams Charania, I think they tag team on a story to detail why that is no longer the case. They talked about a practice incident between Terry Stotts and Adrian Griffin. I'm not quite sure what to do with that. That certainly caught me off guard. Do you have any thoughts on that whole ordeal?
I mean, weird timing. But this is the flip side of having an experienced head coach on staff to help out. And I don't want to speculate too much, but most of the time, most coaches are going to try and get, quote unquote, their guys, because having that kind of relationship can help you navigate a lot of the little things or moments that are going to pop up over the course of a season. What got reported, I don't feel like is the biggest deal in the world. I feel like it's a pretty common occurrence, but you never know what is bubbling up inside. As far as we have a first-year head coach who has played and also has a ton of experience as an assistant, and you have a associate head coach who has a ton of experience as an assistant and a head coach, and just naturally that could just cause some different vibrations. You know, it would be like if me and you started the pod now versus when we did. It's just a different vibe. You know what I mean? You're probably a big time you ride the planet. It's fine, though.
That's a terrible bit.
Go ahead. No, I thought, I thought they had both enough experience to understand and navigate it. But it just kind of felt like a, you know what, you got it, instead of let's figure it out. I think the other part of it is sliding from the assistant chair to the head coach chair is challenging. Sliding back down from the head chair to the assistant chair is challenging because it is a grind every single day. And you might have 10, 15, 20 ideas. None of them get heard. The one you said, no. And then, okay, let's go to work. And so, I mean, if you're out the game for 2 years, you kind of see the writing on the wall. Maybe you don't need to do it. Okay, you know what? Respectfully, let's shake hands.
Y'all got it.
Best of luck. We good. So that was it for me.
Okay. And I think for me, it was just the timing deal. Like, as it's, I guess, trying to like compare that to like, obviously, Joe Mazzulla got the head coaching job in Boston under very different circumstances, but like Joe Mazzulla not being able to build a staff and just kind of just having to go through year one with that. Adrian Griffin seemingly having one and then losing the head assistant right before the season starts. It's like, how much is this actually going to affect, you know, how much is this actually going to impact his start in his year? I don't know, because I'm just not in the building. But like, that's what kind of came to mind for me early on.
You just reshape responsibilities. Having been on the staff where the general manager and head coach both got fired at the same time, you just kind of figure it out.
Fair enough. Well, we are not going to tap into Steve trauma. So without further ado, we will dip into these extensions really quickly. Again, recording on a Sunday night. The extension deadline is Monday afternoon at, I think, 6 Eastern. So more trickle in. We'll get to those on the next pod. Oh, go ahead.
How annoyed are you going to be when more trickle in?
It depends on when they trickle in. Like, if they trickle in Monday morning, it's like, all right, fair play. If we are getting to free throws and then some trickles in, I'm going to be very upset. But we're going to hope for the best here. We'll start with the Spurs very quickly. The Spurs and Zach Collins are going to a 2-year, $35 million extension. Collins averaged 12-6-3 last year. In 26 starts, he averaged 15-8-4. I will put my hand up. I was just flat out wrong about Zach Collins. I saw, which unfortunately not his fault, but all the health issues that he had early in his career, Spurs signed him to a contract that I thought, wow, that's a lot for someone that hasn't played a lot. And he's hooped. He has hooped. Inside out dynamic, the playmaking, making strides defensively. Like, he has done everything that's been asked of him. So I am happy for him. One, dealing with all those injuries and bouncing back to be a productive player is tough to do, and he nailed it. two, he's been so much better than I thought, even with healthy. So I want to give him the salute. I'll, again, put my hand up. I was just wrong on that one. L taken. Salute to Zach Collins.
Real quick, I'm glad you took that. And dunkers out there, accountability is important. Because you were not high on that deal.
And, I was not.
And he has done, he's done what he's supposed to do. I mean, I think you're on record April 3rd. What date is this? No, December 13th, 2017. Why were people so excited about Zach Collins coming out of college? So this has been long-term storytelling. So I'm glad we finished the story here. And it's good for Zach Collins, especially with how he was perceived going to San Antonio to overcome the injuries, put the work in, find a way to contribute, and kind of let everything else grow around that naturally. That's not easy. So salute to him. Glad he cashed in. I deleted the rest of the tweets I was going to read off, so you're good.
Fair enough. He's going to be a fun partner alongside Victor Wembanyama on both ends of the floor, I feel. I'm excited to watch those two work. The Wizards and Denny Avdija agreeing to a four-year, $55 million extension. Avdija averaged 9 points, 6 boards, and 3 assists last year. 53% on twos, 30% on threes, 74% from the line. In 40 starts, he was at 10-7-3. We'll quickly note for those who were still watching the Wizards at the end of the year when people were shut down and all that good stuff, I guess that would be us two plus Wizards fans, probably it. He did close out his last six games of the year, averaging 15-8-6. A lot more aggressive, had a 20-11-6 game against San Antonio, a 25-10-5 game against Boston. He's honestly one of my favorite players in the league, which a very Nekias thing to say. But again, big wing, can pass, just a really smart connector, really good wing defender, one of the more underrated ones in the league. This feels like fair value with where the league has grown financially. This is essentially the mid-level exception for him. And so, like, I think it's good value. If the shot does improve, or more importantly, if just the general aggression continues to uptick, I think this is going to look good. He still remains at the top of my I wish he was on a good team list. And so we will see what it looks like in year one of this deal as Washington tries to build this thing out. But I think he's firmly a good player.
No, and I think it's good for them to commit to him and him to know, okay, I'm good to go. I'm a piece of what they want. You mentioned the stats towards the end of the year. I still think there's more in the tank with Denny, especially as far as being able to showcase the playmaking, staying aggressive with the drives, the shot improving. I do wonder how that dynamic goes. Because if you go from Bradley Beal and now it's Jordan Poole, it's different to a degree. Mm-hmm. So how does he now balance that out, knowing that he's going to be there and they want him there? Does that help smooth things out potentially? Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be like messy, but just like that's just a natural basketball thing where, okay, I'm looking to break out. I think I can do more.
Here comes Jordan Poole.
But I think they'll be able to find their flow.
Gotcha. Like in theory, like they should be able to play off of each other. So we'll see how they use. We'll see what kind of usage Washington gets out of Denny as a screener. Maybe you can unlock some short roll things if Jordan Poole is able to consistently draw two to the ball. We shall see. And then back to the West, the Nuggets and Zeke Nnaji agreeing to a four-year, $32 million extension. I am intrigued. The four-year deal off rip. That seems like solid value. But as I said on the division preview, this is going to be a big year for Zeke. The bench is just much younger this time around for Denver than it was last year. And I think the theory of him, tall guy that can shoot, that can switch, that can handle it a little bit, that is very intriguing for this Denver team. He's going to have to do all those things at once and do those things consistently. If he does that, this deal is going to look much better than it does right now. And if he doesn't, it's not awful. It seems very tradable, and he's young enough to, if it doesn't work out for him in year one or year two of this thing, he can be moved with someone else. And I think you can get something decent if you're Denver. You're trying to keep this train rolling while you have your core locked in. So it seems like a fair bit of business for both sides.
I'd agree with that. I mean, that's what, like in the Trey Lyles territory money-wise? Somewhere I think it's good for, again, him to feel that commitment. I imagine he contributes. There's a little bit more investment to make sure that he's in a position to contribute. I think it's a good price for both sides, and hopefully he continues to develop and they get the payoff for their investment. It's interesting. This continues the theme. I know there's still a bunch of rookies out there who potentially will or will not get extensions. Teams looking to keep their players and control the contract and try and keep it on the low. Do you think this new CBA helps or hurts rookies when it comes to these extensions?
I think it helps. I think it helps like the top tier. And then I think it also helps like the Zeke Najee's, who are like, they've shown enough for injury. And so we can sign them to this deal that looks better. I wonder still about like the middle ground, the players that are a tier or a tier 0.5 above Zeke that you don't want to give max money to, but also you can't give them 432. Like that's where like the Denny class is like, how many of those, you know what I mean? How many of those can you get? Because like as far, you know, we've all talked about how fair the Denny number was. Would you have been shocked if Denny said, nah, I'm going to play this out. Let's see what restricted free agency looks like.
No.
And if he did that, would either of us have been surprised if insert Team X signs Denny Avdia to a 4-year 70 or a 4-year $80 million offer sheet? I wouldn't have been shocked. Wouldn't have been shocked by that. And so, like, I do wonder, again, like, I think it's going to be interesting with, as of recording, we haven't heard anything on Patrick Williams yet. Like, what does his number look like? Because he represents that, like, tier above or tier 0.5 above, where he's not getting the full max off rip, because that would have been done in July. But I don't know. I don't know where he falls. So I'm curious on that portion. Very quickly, because we've been deep into like preview talk and the WNBA finals just ended. So we're going to talk about that as well. We haven't really had like a preseason discussion outside of some stuff sprinkled in during the previews. Just very quickly on some preseason takeaways. Who's caught your eye? Any teams, players that have impressed you? What's on the notepad for Steve?
I got a few. Before we did that, I wanted to ask, what do you, Nekias Duncan, look for during the preseason?
Ooh, for me, like it very boring answer, but it depends on the team and what the expectations are. You know, for like the title contenders, the ready-made guys, it's okay, who are the guys that may factor in like 8 through 11 or something in the rotation? Who's clamoring for those spots? Who can pop? Who can do those things? So like for Denver as an example, I don't really care what Nikola Jokic does in preseason. I don't want him to get hurt. Like, y'all stay healthy, you good. I know what you can do. We know what you're building towards. My eyes immediately goes to, okay, they're replacing Bruce Brown. They're going to be replacing Jeff Green. They're trying to figure out what the wing/forward room looks like. Hey, what is Julian Strother going to do? What is Peyton Watson going to do? What is Christian Brown going to do now? What is Zeke Nagy going to do as he just got the extension? So, like, for teams like that, I'm looking at what that looks like. For the younger teams, like your Houstons, okay, what kind of playmaking step did Jalen Green showcase? Can we glean anything from this? What is Amen looking like? What is Şengün looking like? Which, a pretty fun defensive preseason for Şengün, which that's also just compared to like his standard that we've seen for the first couple of years. But that intrigues me. So I want to see, like, can I glean some stuff from the younger guys? So it's really team dependent for me.
Not surprised you went younger guys. I like the preseason. You get a glimpse into what teams are like emphasizing, what they've been trying to work on. New faces and new places is always fun. You get a hint at some concepts. New coaches, new coaching staff, players returning. I do take most things with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people love to say, hey, the preseason doesn't matter. And hey, maybe not. But having been in there, it definitely can. Like, some of these teams have a lot of energy and ideas and are closer to the drawing board than we know. And a lot of these teams came out feeling better about their vision. For me, it's just kind of taking a peek. Like, it depends on different teams. Like, if you're an established star, I'm not looking for a lot. Just stay healthy. If it's like a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, come off a great year. Okay, what are you trying to do a little bit differently? Oh, the step back. Cool. Got it. Or, oh, bam, you're attacking a lot quicker. Cool. Got it. Just real quick, jot it down. We're out of there. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot more of an OOK guy. Rather than this is the thing for this team. Like, oh, okay, all right, that's neat. This is the time to use your pencil. Don't use your pen, but don't ignore what you see. I probably dive more into like rotations and lineups and are you trying this defensively? What are you trying differently? Who's playing with who? You like the young guys. I get a little tricked up sometimes because it's like, okay, was this production with a unit you're going to play with, or was this you got to hoop production? Mm-hmm. Which is neither here nor there, but if you got 28 minutes and this amount of shots, okay, that might not be what you do. So salute, but I'm gonna keep that in the back of my mind. Back to your original question. After I hijacked it, the Celtics stood out to me. The spacing of that starting lineup stood out to me. The defensive versatility they've shown as far as being able to switch, being able to insulate Porzingis, Drew's defense, Drew getting downhill in different ways. Porzingis is a roller. Porzingis is a scorer. Tyrese Maxey, ready to go. Very decisive. Obviously, the Dame Giannis pick and roll, just being able to see what that looks like now and like, oh, okay, so the Bucks can just get you in rotation. Fantastic. The focus of the Lakers has stood out to me. I just feel like they've consistently built Victor Wembanyama being loud defensively, just on the weak side, literally just some of those moments where you're just trying to figure out what's going on and how to express it. The potential of the Suns pick and roll and the flashes you've seen from like multiple people who could fill that fifth role, which is funny because that was the biggest question last year. It's like, oh yeah, I could see Grayson Allen. Oh, they do have Eric Gordon. Oh, Nasir Little could work. Oh, so it's like, oh, okay. They have options. Obi Toppin is a roller. Did you have any before I get to my paragraph? Because I still have more.
Oh, no, you keep going. Like, I have thoughts, but like, no, wrong.
So I was like, Zaire Williams. Boy, he's looks like he's having a great preseason. And Thomas Bryant, he can screen and roll and plays hard. And hey, Jalen Green's getting downhill a lot more. And Jordan Poole, really looking to let it fly. Oh yeah, Karl-Anthony Towns really trying to drive. And then, oh, Luka's getting more dribble handoffs. And look at Ben Simmons.
Yes.
Driving. And oh, the Cavs are trying to use Evan Mobley as a hub more. And Zion is doing things and getting steals. And hey, Scoot Henderson is pretty good at changing speeds and being in control. My brain just goes all over the place in preseason. I just try and organize it, take those thoughts, and keep building. Because this first week is going to tell you some things. It's not going to tell you everything.
Yeah, like I think that's also kind of the fun as just a general basketball watcher and some of the fun that I have with this podcast in general. Because we go, obviously we have the W mixed in, but just on the NBA side, it's preseason, this is interesting, until like the first 2 weeks of the season where it's trying to figure out, okay, how much of that was real? And how much of this is going to sustain? So you just get like a potentially like a 3 week honeymoon period of, look at this team tried to play with more pace. They were 25th and now they're 18th through the first week and a half. That's fire. Team that said we're going to crash the glass more. Now they're 14th in offensive rebound rate. How about that? So that part's going to be fun. For me, like you hit on the cat point, the Wolves, shout out to the Wolves and the Raptors, the only undefeated teams in preseason, the Toronto Raptors. Leading the NBA in preseason net rating, a plus 22 through their preseason games. And I was like, you know what? It kind of stinks. Because I still just have these big questions and the cloud is still there. And like, I want to change my mind, but I know in my heart, like, I don't know if this going to work once the regular season starts. I do appreciate the general emphasis for more player movement, more ball movement. Scotty Barnes looks good in the preseason. I think that's just going to be the single most important portion of their season, regardless of if they surprise and win 45 games or if they win 28 games. If Scottie Barnes makes the leap this year, I think Toronto's going to be feeling okay. They still have some decisions to make. What are they going to do with Pascal? What are they going to do with OG? But if Scottie makes a leap, I think they're going to feel fine. But go ahead.
Did you get a direct email after our Raptors preview?
I did not. You know, it's wild. Like, I haven't gotten any pushback on the Raptors portion yet. I think the fans are just enjoying what the preseason has been for them. It's like, wow, that's at least been the mood of my timeline. Wow, this team actually plays like it likes each other. This is so much fun. So I'm just going to let them rock.
Okay.
If they come back to that preview episode like 6 days from now, and then my mentions are on fire out of all of a sudden, and I know what happened, but I'm happy for them. So I hope they keep that up. On the Wolves front again, you already hit on Cat. I had guard questions that I talked about, particularly with the bench when we did our division preview for the Wolves. Nice to see Shake Milton look solid, get downhill, also knock down shots. Nikhil Alexander-Walker letting it fly from deep. Didn't shoot particularly well, shade under 35% from three, but the fact that he is shooting with confidence, I'm keeping an eye on it. If that just turns out to be a slow start and he ends up being like a 37% three-point shooter this year, I think that's big because I like his defense. I like the way that he can attack tilted defenses. So we will see. Beyond that, Tyler Herro, top three in preseason scoring. I just like the way that Miami used him. Like, he looked more comfortable with the ball in his hands. His decisions felt a little bit quicker, as you noted, like with Bam. But also getting him off ball and letting him catch the ball on the move before attacking, or just getting him off ball with like some pin downs and stuff and him being able to get some catch and shoots, which I think is the best utilization of him. That was exciting to see. While we're on the Heat, Cole Swider surely let it fly. Earned himself a spot with Miami. Haywood Highsmith, who very fun stuff defensively last year. Some fun stuff as a cutter, timely offensive rebounds. The shot, we don't know if he's going to shoot it. We don't know if he's going to make it. Shot 60% from three on the shade under four attempts, which isn't super high volume, but the comfort in which he took threes, jumper looks a little bit smoother. He's not going to shoot 60% from three because, duh, that's just not going to happen. I'm kind of handling him shooting like 37.5% from three. And if he does that with the versatility that he has defensively, that's going to help solve some of the who's playing the four question, because God bless Kevin Love.
Don't do it. Don't do that.
Okay, we're going to save that then. Quick hat tip to Julian Strother, who averaged a shade under 18 points in 23 minutes and shot over 45% from three on 7.8 attempts. He let it fly. He's quietly going into the what else zone, but we will see how that factors in as the regular season goes on. And Ben Simmons. It's so good watching that man play basketball. He just looks physically back. He's driving with some more force. Like, I already talked about it on the Atlanta preview, so I'm not going to rehash it. Y'all can check out that episode. But just makes me happy that he's out there and he's doing the thing. Also, you know what I did earlier today? As I was just like, you know what? I've been catching preseason during the watch parties and some stuff here and there. So I just watched all the pick and roll possessions with Mišić.
Okay.
Buddy, that dude's fun. What the heck?
Here we go. I've been waiting. Oh my goodness.
He is such a hook pass merchant. It is so fun, though. In the back of my mind, I was like, okay, is he going to hit shots, though? Because, like, he's getting to these pull-ups. He ain't making none of them. I don't know how I feel about that part. And then I was like, the burst kind of, we'll see what they're going to do with these switch. And then we just got to a whole bunch of switch possessions where he's just slipping that sucker in there. We got some quick flips, more hook passes, some quick bounce passes. Like, hey, man, he reads the floor very well. I am intrigued. I've had a couple of people ask me as I, like, commented on the Thunder sparingly throughout preseason. Like, hey, what you think of Mišić? I just haven't touched it because, like, I haven't watched him in depth yet. I've seen the Thunder, but, like, you know, we bouncing around. Oh, yeah, I am going to enjoy watching that man play basketball if he's, like, just the backup ball handler. I am intrigued. What a fun guy, pick and roll. Watching him and Jalen Williams. Okay, we're here too long. I'm trying to think. Any other shout-outs that I want to give? Like, I do, but I don't want to hang here for, like, 30 minutes.
No,
do you have any quick ones?
Just quick hat tip to Jonathan Kuminga and Peyton Pritchard and Bones Highland saying, yep, it's scoring time. And then Julian Strother for the Nuggets. Very fun to watch. So, yeah, I thought preseason was fun.
Got you. Actually, quickly, on the Clippers front, as Ty Lue, I think, named Terrence Mann as the starter. It just ended up being the lineup that we talked about on the pod. Are you in on that group?
Yes.
Russ, Terrence Mann, Paul George, Kawhi, Zubats.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. I want to see what it looks like. It's either just going to blitz teams. It's going to be like a 115 offensive rating, like a 98 defensive rating, or, hey, there's Russ without the ball. We're going to help off of him. Hey, Terrence Mann, let's see if you can shoot. Oh, Zubats, he's not screening right now. Helping off of him. And then it's just Paul George and Kawhi working in the phone booth. It's going to be a very boom or bust lineup, which is why I want to see it, because I want to see which side it lands on. So that part was interesting to me. Quickly on Utah, we talked a little bit about John Collins in the preseason usage. Where Chris Dunn is fun. If he just ends up being the answer at point guard short term, that is going to appeal very much to my basketball sensibilities. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. I wonder how quickly they turn things over to, like, Keontae George. It's probably going to take a minute because Chris Dunn looks good. Leave it there. Because I can just keep going. All right. Let's get to some season predictions. Yeah. As we did last year, We will start with the awards. Naturally, like, injuries and stuff probably blow up a lot of this. But entering to year, Steve, who do you have as your MVP, your preseason MVP pick?
Now, this should be a very fun race. But I'm going to tell everyone now, buckle up. Buckle up. Just buckle up right now. I'm going to try and talk about the MVP as much as I can before it gets gross. Because, buddy, it is going to eventually. Think about this, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, we're just wishing full health for everyone. Last year's top five. Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Names not listed. Luka, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron James. Mm-hmm. Hey, does Devin Booker make another leap? Donovan Mitchell or De'Aaron Fox, do they do even more? Does Zion play all season and the Pelicans play well? Does Anthony Davis play all season and the Lakers play well? Hey, what if Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler decide, hey, regular season, it's time to go to work?
They're going to play exactly 65 games. It's going to be the funniest thing.
So, to be honest, and I keep it with a lens of kind of the trends of how people discuss these things, unless the Sixers are like a top two seed post-trade, I just don't think Embiid gets the love. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying. I think Jokic is going to be there unless Denver just does not get the wins in the West. I think Giannis will be in there. It really feels like a Jason Tatum year, especially if the Celtics deliver the winning. Mm-hmm. Luka will be in the conversation, but that West is kind of tough, so I feel like he's going to split with someone else. Mm-hmm. The Tatum part is like the asterisk. I'm leaning Giannis right now.
Okay.
I just think having the kind of space that he may have, not having to do as many things as he's had to offensively, and can he now combat that even more? I'm going Giannis right now.
Okay. See, it's funny like hearing you like talk through this because I'm with you. And because I'm with you, I also just have a different answer. I'm with you. Like, I don't think Joel Embiid gets the love. And conversely, I feel like there's going to be, like, some Jokic overcorrection for the people that didn't vote for him for bad reasons. Again, like, I think Joel Embiid just had a case. So, like, I'm not mad at that vote. But, like, for the specific subset of people that said no Jokic because of reasons that were dumb, I think we may see overcorrection there. And I wonder how that swings some of the votes, provided Jokic stays healthy and Denver's good, which I think both of the things are going to happen. I worry about Giannis's MVP case. And I will say this is, one, I don't have a vote, so it doesn't matter. But, like, two, I do not agree with this. But I worry that because Dame is going to make Giannis's life easier, that people are going to penalize whatever the Giannis efficiency numbers are because of Dame. But Dame is also not going to be better than Giannis, so you can't give Dame the MVP vote. And it's going to end with Giannis getting a bunch of, like, third-place votes. And I'm going to yell on this very podcast. But, like, I feel like that's why he's... unless the Bucks are just, like, 63 and 18, and he's, like, clearly the best player in the league. Like, I feel like people are going to overthink it with Giannis. I do think this is just a Tatum year.
Hmm.
I think, at least for the regular season, I think Boston is going to be the best team in the East during the regular season. And I think, you know, quickly on the preseason front, the Jason Tatum drives have been really fun. They've been strong. The Jason Tatum drives have been really strong. If he's putting together another, like, 39-5 for the top seed in the East, that just feels like a pretty clear-cut case for him. In light of, like, again, Giannis might get dinged and Embiid not going to get the love. We'll see how much Denver cares about the regular season. Did you see the Jamal Murray comments earlier?
Which ones?
Ah, that is, yeah. Well, he was kind of alluding to, like, it's going to look a little messy to start. They're going to be trying to build some habits with the younger guys, et cetera, et cetera. That sounds very much like, hey, if we win 48 games, don't worry, we steal the Nuggets when the playoffs hit. And maybe that's just me reading into that too much.
Oh, I took that as, hey, we're probably going to do some of those early season Nuggets things that we usually do. Mm-hmm. Just a heads up.
Yeah. So with that, but yeah, like, this very much feels like a Jason Tatum wins MVP year.
Okay. I cannot shake. Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, or LeBron is going to make this even more interesting.
I think of the three, it feels like it would be Steph.
Look. both of them have the opportunity to do what they do in an easier fashion. Mm-hmm. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Where are you at on defensive player of the year heading the season?
I am interested to see how this breaks out. You need a certain level of noise to capture the imagination of the voters. It definitely feels like a big, no disrespect to the guards or the wings or Herb Jones. It feels like there are too many bigs. I don't know if Jaren's going to be able to go back-to-back. I don't know if Brooke's going to get the same love or hit the same heights, perception-wise. If Anthony Davis, the way he's played in the preseason defensively, could stay healthy, he could really reestablish himself into this race and conversation. Mm-hmm. There's always the Draymond factor. It does feel set up for Evan Mobley to make a strong push. I will state that. I'm going to go with Bam Adebayo again.
Okay.
He's always sneaky. He does so many things defensively. I think it's, and he's talking about how people don't watch defense. So he appears to have a chip on his shoulder. So I'm going to go with Bam right now. I think it's his year. What say you? And I have a follow-up question after you're done.
Okay. I literally have Evan Mobley / Bam Adebayo in my notes. So we are we are aligned. Like, I do lean Evan Mobley. Like, the second half push, one, he was just really freaking good. But two, like, the specific push behind him and the numbers and everything was also very real. And I think he builds on that. And I think, and it's convoluted, and I don't really love this, but if Evan Mobley is better offensively, more people will tune in to watch Evan Mobley and thus see how good he is on defense. I don't think it should work like that, but I do think that's going to factor in for some folks. I'm glad you hit on one, not just Bam, but the fact that Bam is talking preseason. And I say that complimentary. I am glad that he is speaking up more, because I do think, like, going back to, like, the GM survey, in which he just does not get a singular vote for best defensive player in the league. It's just like, are we not watching the same Bam Adebayo? I'm very confused. And so if the Heat just have this big chip on their shoulder, which they always do, but then you add in, like, the Dame stuff, this could very well just be the best season of Bam's career. And if the Heat are, like, quote-unquote, surprisingly a home court team during the regular season, Bam's going to be at the forefront of that. And he may finally get, like, award love for that. But I lean Evan Mobley right now, but I'm Bam's going to have a strong case.
Are you ready for my follow-up?
Yes.
Are you ready for Victor Wembanyama to leap towards the top of this discussion?
I will frame it like this. I just hope they don't do it too early. That's going to be my thing, because I very much see the outline of how Victor can just be an elite defender from day one. We've seen it in preseason, to where he could just warp the floor. I don't want this to turn into, whoa, Wemby just got another three-point block, and he ends up being like a bad switch defender this year, and then that just gets swept completely under the rug because he's doing the fun stuff. Like, that's the part that's going to annoy me. And I hope that doesn't happen.
So you are not ready, is what you're telling me. One, salute to, it's actually fun to, like, see the Spurs play defense like the way they are in general again. It's like, oh, wow, mm-hmm. San Antonio's defending. If the Spurs are good, I think there is a bigger chance than people are thinking right now. Mm-hmm. Well, he's very tall, and he does a lot of loud things that can be seen by a whole wide spectrum of folks. Like, the blocks are going to jump off the page. You can just take pictures of the blocks, and people are going to jump off the page before he even gets the block.
Yeah. Like, I go back to the preseason game against the Heat. And when the picture was circulating, when him doing, like, the Luke Cornette, mm-hmm. and it was on a shot that was made, but because the picture was insane, it's like, holy crap, look at Wimp. Like, I don't want that to happen.
But think
I'm glad you said this. Very, like, 15-second thing on San Antonio that I've been simmering on. I'm very excited for people to actually watch the Spurs, but I'm also annoyed that people are just now about to start tapping into watching the Spurs. like, all due respect, like, I feel like we're about to get some, we're going to hear, like, Keldon Johnson, two-way player on a broadcast, and I'll be like, ah, y'all are just now tapping in for Wimby, huh? I see what this is turning into. People are about to learn how good Devin Vassell is, and then we're going to get, like, a random Devin Vassell or Desmond Bane. It was like, whoa, hold on. Like, I know y'all ain't seen him last year. Let's not overcorrect because y'all didn't see that this dude was good and the team was bad, so y'all ain't still. Anyway, that was longer than 15 seconds. Continue.
Okay, so you are not prepared for the Spurs viewing experience. Got that noted as well. The thing is, think about how loud his weak side defense is already. Like, literally, hey, I'm going to help off at the wing as the top man on the weak side, which, again, for 98% of people who have ever played basketball, that is, oh, you're here? Skip, three, bye. You block the shot. So if he's going to be loud on ball, potentially, loud with the blocks, loud with the weak side defense, and the Spurs are good, hey, that think piece is coming, buddy.
Oh, Lord. If it's done in earnest, I am here for. Again, you were talking to someone as we did, like, our fake award ballots during the Evan Mobley year. I had Evan Mobley on an all-defensive team. I am not opposed to rookie bigs getting love. I just want it to be earned. If I get Wimby leads the NBA with 2.6 blocks, but, like, the defensive field goal percentage inside of, like, 4 feet is, like, 58 or something, and y'all are trying to push him for DPOY, I'm going to be upset.
So you were behind the Gobert push, but pushing back on Wimby. C'est incroyable, mon ami.
You just want to get that off. Oh, okay. I got you. Understandable. But with all of that being said, I would assume we both have Wimby as Rookie of the Year, provided he plays enough games.
Yeah, Wimby, Chet, Scoop for me. Okay. It's just how loud does Chet make this?
Yeah. Like, I just hope we don't get, like, the... And it wouldn't be the same thing in terms of, like, impact, I don't think. But, like, just in terms of general race, like, the Brogdon Embiid thing. Like, I don't want it to become... If Wimby loses Rookie of the Year, I want it to just be because Chet was insane or because Scoot was insane. Or, like, Wimby played 58 games instead of 65. I don't want it to be something like that. But I'm with you at Wimby. Definitely with you with Chet. He's just going to be good, period. And I've also enjoyed the Scoot experience. I will say... I want to see how quickly Scoot comes along defensively. I'm glad I said that. That reminds me of a preseason shout-out I wanted to give. Anthony Simons has been defending his tail off this preseason, and he deserves a shout-out for that.
Excuse me, are you okay?
I am okay.
Are you sure?
Yes, and I think he made, like, a specific comment, like, it was either pregame or postgame, about him wanting to improve as a defender and that being a point of emphasis for him. Screen navigation looks so much better than it was last year. Now, we will see if that carries over into the regular season, but he deserves his props for what I've seen in the preseason from him. He is fighting his tail off navigating screens. But anyway, Wimby for Rookie of the Year. Most improved.
Why you say it like that?
I was just trying to transition, that's all.
No, I thought that you... Okay, all right. I see what you're trying to do here.
No, but I'm saving
the... And what y'all going to come up with this year? What are y'all going to come up with this year for most improved, huh? Is it Mikal Bridges? Huh? Is that what we're doing? Is it Cade Cunningham? What is it? Is it Zion? Is it Jordan? Is it Jordan Poole? Is he going to have, like, a big year? And, oh, Jordan Poole. Is it Austin Reeves?
It is whoever improves the most for me.
Someone going to find a way to give it to Paolo? Like, what are we doing?
Hey, if Paolo leaps to all NBA level this year, I'm not opposed. I have to see how it plays out.
See?
So
it's Tyrese Maxey for me. Based on what I've seen, I'm going with Tyrese Maxey. He's going to get it.
Okay, I got you. When we talked about this over the summer, I think I said on one of the pods, it wasn't a preview pod yet. But I said on one of the pods, like, Trey Murphy is already just my front runner for most approved. And so naturally he got hurt and he's going to miss, like, the first month and a half or whatever. So with that being the case, I have Scottie Barnes as my most improved player heading into the year. Similar to, you know, you saw the leaps, saw the improvement from Tyrese Maxey during preseason. Seeing similar things with Scottie. Again, I'm keeping an eye on what the offensive context is going to be for him. Spacing wise in particular, what lineups they put him in. But I think he's firmly just going to be better on both ends of the floor. And that is where I am leaning. I'm sorry Trey Murphy is hurt. Otherwise, he would be my pick. Sixth man of the year.
Oh, Chris Paul. You go ahead and book that. You thought the impact and leadership noise was loud on the MVP campaign. Buddy, just you wait.
That's amazing. Chris Paul, Sixth Man of the Year award would be pleasing to me. I guess non-Chris Paul division, Al Horford, if he ends up being the guy that Boston says we're going to manage minutes, they just start Derek White and Drew Holiday, I think Al Horford's going to be a very easy, what did I say during the watch part, like 10, 6, and 3? I think he could just do that and play solid defense, if not better defense, if they're maintenance, you know, if they're trying to maintenance the minutes and all that good stuff. And I think he's just going to be on the best team in the East, if not the league in terms of record. So I think he would be a front runner for that. Naturally, I'm not going to be upset if Chris Paul wins Sixth Man of the Year for very obvious reasons. Okay. This is the one I had issue with. Where you go with Coach of the Year? Because I was trying to pinpoint the team that comes out of nowhere, but I also feel like everyone's bunched up, so none of these teams actually come out of nowhere for me.
I mean, I just made my best guess. Like, if I had to pick someone who's going to get that type of love off rip, it's probably Dagnall. I feel like if OKC's good, he'll get that push. But, I mean, at the start of the season, based on everything, I'd probably go either Joe Mazzulla or Frank Vogel. Wow, this team is very good and blended new pieces together, and they're very good. But, I mean, we don't have the full spectrum of this team came out of nowhere, this team had to deal with injuries. So it's kind of tough. Those are my two guesses right now. I probably lean Joe.
Okay. Well, naturally, I have Frank Vogel as my selection. I was flirting with, like, Darvin Ham, and I was wondering, like, how much people would use, like, the second half of the year. It's like, well, it's not that different from that team, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how fair that is, but, like, I wonder how much that would factor in for voters. Frank Vogel is just coming into a new situation, and so if the defense is good, I think that that's going to be a very easy case to make, and the offense should speak for itself with those three guys. All right, how do you see the West playing out? We'll start with the regular season standings. Who's in for you?
Was I supposed to do this in order?
Order would be preferred, but if you want to just give the teams, then that's fine.
I got you, big dog. Nuggets, Suns, Warriors, Grizzlies, Kings, Lakers, Pelicans, Wolves, Mavs, Clippers.
No Thunder in the play-in for you. That hurts. Tough. Well, naturally, because I'm me, I have the full 15. So six playoff teams.
Wait, you have the full 15?
Yeah. I just did these standards. You know,
we're talking these out. All right, let's go, buddy.
All right, top six. I have the Nuggets, the Lakers, the Suns, the Warriors, the Wolves, and the Kings. Seventh seed would be Memphis for me. OKC is the 8th seed. New Orleans is the 9th seed. The Clippers is the 10th seed. Just outside, Dallas at 11, Portland 12, Houston 13, San Antonio 14, Utah 15.
Okay. So that Utah, them standing shuffled after USC lost, huh?
No. I feel like we talked about this on Depot.
So you are out on Dallas. Okay.
That defense really worries me.
Okay.
But that's where I am on the West. I can reel off the East real quick if you want.
No, let me get my little list out of the way. We'll do a little build up for the viewers. Okay. That way if they had a red light, they could just wait and be like, oh, it's coming. Celtics, Bucks, Cavs, Heat, Sixers, Knicks, Hawks, Pacers, Bulls, Nets.
Okay. Got you. For me, Boston 1, Milwaukee 2, Cleveland 3, New York 4, Philly 5, Miami 6, Atlanta 7, Indy 8, Brooklyn 9, Orlando 10. Just outside, Toronto 11, Chicago 12, Charlotte 13, Washington 14, Detroit 15.
So you were out on both Dallas and the Bulls.
Well, we'll see what's up with Chicago. Like, which is odd because like it's not like they've had like a bad preseason. It's more so I want to see what this offense looks like. I want to see what kind of shooting they get this year, and I also want to see if they turn teams over as much as they were able to last year. That defense is really good. The defense slips to like 10th it's still good, but like, does that bad? We'll see.
Can I be respectfully messy?
Go ahead.
Hey, I need this. I need this film to show what I think is about to go left.
Hey, we get to December 1st and Chicago is just like 15-6 or something. I'm like, well, I was wrong again. We did it. But, you know, it's fine. That is fine. All right, who do you have going to the conference finals and who's your finals pick?
Well, it's going to come down to matchups. It always comes down to matchups. So right now, I'd probably say Celtics, Bucks, Nuggets, Suns, Celtics, Suns, Celtics.
Okay. I have, based on my seeding anyway, Nuggets, Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, Celtics, Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. I have a Nuggets, Celtics finals matchup. I have the Celtics winning it all this year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we shall see. We shall see. Can't wait to revisit this in like, again, December. Like, well, here are the six L's that I have to take already because insert team has been injured. Insert team has been better than I thought, et cetera, et cetera.
That's why they're predictions.
Yeah.
It's a roadmap, but, you know, people want to be right and stuff. I got a question for you. With this stacked competitive league, how many teams, if they made a conference finals run, would you be like, yeah, that makes sense?
How many teams would I be? In the West, like if Denver, well, I had the Nuggets and the Lakers, so like duh on them. If Phoenix gets in, like that makes sense. The Warriors would make sense. I guess I would add, I think their floor is lower, which is why I have them to play in. But like if the Clippers pulled it together, I wouldn't be surprised. New Orleans defense seems to still be real if they get healthy at the right time. Like that wouldn't surprise me. And then Memphis, did they get all the pieces healthy at the right time? I guess, so what was it, 7-8 in the West? Which, again, speaks to, yeah. And then on the East, like Boston, Milwaukee, duh, they're already in. Cleveland wouldn't shock me. Miami wouldn't shock me. I don't think New York would super surprise me, especially if the offense, I mean, if the playoff offense is better. And again, like, I like their second unit. Like, I like, they should be able to rack up regular season wins. If they play the matchup game, like, it wouldn't surprise me if they make a run. That probably, Philly with an asterisk. Depending on what they get for Harden, like, we'll see. But, like, this is also a team under the, you know, in the Embiid era that has not made a conference finals yet. So, like, I guess Philly, I'll say Philly with an asterisk. I don't want to completely disrespect how good Embiid is, but. Yeah, I think that would do it. So that's 8-6, what, 14 teams?
Yeah, so almost about half the league.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. I can see that.
As I was doing this exercise to get my notes together, it made me miss doing like the written season previews that I've been doing the last few years, in which I could do like the team overview, but I also would make a point to do like ceiling and floor for every team in the league. Mm. And like now hopping on the pod, it's like, well, this is how I see it happening. It just makes me feel like, I know it's not the case, but it just makes me feel like I am just a Team X lover or Team Y hater without giving the context of like, yeah, I have them 11th, but I could see them being fourth. Like that wouldn't surprise me type beat. I miss not having like literal proof of that context. That's just, you know, that's a very Nikias thing to have thoughts about.
Oh, you want to get out the pick and roll, huh? Okay, nope.
Not even that. It's just like, I just like being thorough. So that's all that is. Like, again, it's preseason stuff, so it's fine. We're at hour 10 in. Do you want to go to free throws?
We can. Do you have free throws?
I do have a few free throws for you. Do you have free throws?
Yeah, I'll get mine out the way.
Okay.
Jordan Poole said that his family is taken care of. He got a ring, and that this is probably the first time in his life he'll play basketball with no pressure. All-star season coming?
That would not surprise me. Or he's going to average 29 points with like a 53 true shooter.
Whose preseason vibes do you believe in more, Tyler Herro's or Jordan Poole's?
honestly, Tyler Heroes.
Okay. Are you ready for an unfair one?
Let's go.
Is Paul George this generation's Tracy McGrady?
Oh. Yes. Which feels disrespectful to both somehow. Because if I'm T-Mac, it's just like, hey, man, did you see me? And if I'm Paul George, it's like, well, I've been to a conference finals. And I don't feel good about either of that. Because I love, they are two of my favorite players of all time. T-Mac is my favorite player of all time. I don't, that is an unfair one. So good shout.
That's what I'm here for. How much would you pay to get Klay Thompson's actual post-game thoughts after they played Wemby? And I say that because this man pump faked and then went right to like his quick gather and Wemby got to it. And then pump faked another time and was like, oh, someone's open cutting. And it was a kick ball because that man's just big.
I feel like a lot of expletives are in those real thoughts. Not going to hold you.
Rudy Gobert took the same darkness retreat as Aaron Rodgers. Thoughts?
That tracks. We'll leave it there.
So have you decided what liquid you're going to take for the 8 shots in Vegas? You going ginger ale, lemonade, green tea? What you got, bud?
Well, it's not going to be green tea for sure. Shout out to Miles, Owen, Christina, Tarika, Kareem, all the W Media homies. we went to dinner while in New York for Games 3 and Game 4. Shots were had. I had water in my shot glass because I don't drink. So that was fire. I appreciate not being pressured on that. That was very cool. I had a good time. There's some really good people there. But as for the Ace Parade, it will either be water or lemonade.
Okay. Nope, I won't ask that one. You go.
Okay. All right, fair enough. What is the funniest Skylar Diggins-Smith destination?
The Aces.
I see. I'm glad you said that, though. My second question, how mad would you be if Alana Smith signs with the Aces?
Not at all. That'd be a great signing, actually.
It'd be very good. A great fit. Who scores more this year, Jordan Poole or Jaylen Brown?
I'm going Jaylen Brown.
Okay. Just going to get this one out of the way early because I know I'll be asking you again during the regular season. Darius Garland or Tyrese Haliburton?
I don't like that question. I don't like that question at all. I'm still going Garland right now.
Okay. Tyler Hero or Anthony Simons?
I don't like the way this is framed. Give me Anthony Simons.
Okay. Last one I had for you. It's a Nakia special. With Steven Adams out for the year, who is the best screener in the NBA?
Stephen Curry.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Without further ado, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. We are watching a lot of hoop, and we will be watching a whole lot more hoop as the NBA season tips off on Tuesday. The link to the room should be hyperlinked in your podcast description. If it is, just click on that link into your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If not, copy and paste that link into your browser, into your information. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. Live game watching, live analysis, fun conversations. It's a very holistic community. We have a lot of fun. We also talk about some real life things. So it's a safe space for all. So come through, come have some fun with us. Beyond that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Bye.